Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. As per usual, I'm your host, Anthony Wood. Today's episode is loosely sponsored by the fistful of Benadryl I need to get through this horrible Texas weather. Of course, the draft is just behind us, so we will be speaking later on with Coach Franklin of Penn State and Coach Fleming over at Rhode Island. But first of all, let's welcome to the show Landry Locker. Landry, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. We got a little live sporting event. Draft time is always great. So, I mean, it's awesome. It's an awesome time to be talking to you, and it's an awesome time to be, you know, covering the Houston Texans.
Absolutely, and let's dive straight into it. Obviously, breaking news in the last hour or so, Tashaun Gibson, Texans safety, after just 1 year, has, of course, been released by the Texans. I know some people saw this coming somewhat. Is this something that you'd expected? What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, we thought there was a chance that Tashaun would get released. Obviously, he wasn't the player that they thought they were getting last year. A lot of it was, you know, his ineffectiveness on the field, but also a lot, you know, and not being able to actually be on the field, especially against Kansas City when they needed him most. So I thought that it was possible that they'd move past him, but I thought that, you know, maybe they would draft a safety in order to try to replace him, maybe even at 40 overall, if you look at all the names that were on there. But I'm not surprised he's not here. I am very intrigued to see, you know, what happens with these safeties now, you know, because they got a lot of them. But I'm not sure that they have two starters that you can feel good about putting on the field at the same time. Like, we know that Justin Reed's going to be a starter. We know Justin Reed can play. We know we're expecting big things from Justin Reed. So you have that. You have three guys who can play special teams at a very high level. You just signed Michael Thomas. He's a special teams Pro Bowler from the past. And then you signed Jalen Watkins. And you also you have some other guys that can play special teams, A.J. Moore. And they obviously think a lot of Eric Murray. I just don't know if Eric Murray is a guy that's, you know, a quality starting safety at this point. You know, if you follow the money, you expect stuff from him. But I just didn't know that they were going to put Eric Murray and Justin Reed back there so good. So the only known that we have right now is Justin Reed. And you just got to wonder if, you know, maybe they're going to bring in another safety to put with Justin, and maybe one of the special teams guy goes. Guys aren't with them, but it's interesting to say the least. But I'm not shocked Gibson's gone, but I really don't see what these safeties are going to look like, or if this is going to be the group we see going into camp.
Absolutely, it's an interesting position there, because obviously the secondary in particular these last couple of years has been an area of high turnover for the Texans. Justin Reed being, like you mentioned, really the only certainty, particularly at safety. It's difficult because there was a lot expected of Tashaun Gibson coming into last season, you know, former Pro Bowler, Houston native. Everyone thought, right, this is a great fit. They need an upgrade at covering the tight ends, like you mentioned, and it just didn't quite work out. It was a relatively big financial commitment, you know, 3 years. It was something that at first, obviously, we'd expected a lot from, and he didn't quite match that level going into it, unfortunately. But do you think perhaps the Texans look elsewhere, say, for example, Eric Reed being the big name that comes to mind?
Well, I know Justin Reed has been pitching that, and he's openly said that, you know, he's pitched his brother to Bill O'Brien, and he's also said that Bill O'Brien seems to be a fan of Eric Reed. It would make sense. I mean, from a fit standpoint and from a what the price would be, I mean, if you could get Eric Reed on a one-year deal and you would have him and his brother back there, and then you could use, you know, Eric Murray as kind of a hybrid and sprinkle in some of those guys, maybe only two of those guys. They previously mentioned, you know, Thomas, Watkins, and more. Maybe two of those guys make the roster and they're the special teams contributors. But from a fit standpoint, I think it makes sense. I don't know if that's the direction they'd go. I know there's some moves they can make where they could even clear up some more space. Zach Fulton, you save $7 million if you release him. Maybe you do that and then try to figure stuff out and adjust the money there. But, I mean, I think Eric Reed would make a lot of sense here. He's kind of the box safety. He can let his brother kind of do his thing. I don't know if it's going to happen. I just know that I would feel a lot better about the Texans if they had two guys that I felt confident in starting once the season comes around and once camp comes around.
Absolutely, and obviously we'll head back into free agency later on, but let's head back to the draft. Obviously we've delved into it just a little bit there. What was your thought on this first virtual draft? Would you consider it overall a success?
You mean from like the league perspective, or from like the Texans perspective and what they got?
First of all, from a league perspective.
From a league perspective, I thought it was awesome, man. There are obviously hiccups, and obviously it's more fun. I was arguing about this on the show with my producer, Siggy Sig and Lopez, and they were just basically just hiking their leg all over it, complaining and stuff. And I was like, well, obviously you would like to have the normal draft experience, but given the situation we're dealing with, I think hiccups were actually a representation of, you know, just the current state of the country. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was smooth. There wasn't as much shtick. You know, you get to the players and you go to it. I enjoyed it. I gave it an A+. I was kind of disappointed with the way Goodell handled it the first couple of days. I thought he could have been a little bit more professional. I don't know if he was just trying to put on like a, hey, I'm relaxed mode, but he came across as I don't give a damn guy. And I thought he could have been a little bit more professional and handled himself a little bit better. But as far as just getting it in, you know, we still got to watch the draft, and you watched it, and it was kind of a symbol of the Zoom meetings and everything were going on. I thought that was successful. From a Texan standpoint, I think it's difficult. Texans, I gave it a B. I gave the draft a B, just because you either judge drafts by, you know, the overall class and how much better you get on your football team from Thursday to the end of Saturday, or you judge it by what a team has to work with heading into the draft. I mean, obviously, if you stack up the Texans draft against other teams that have full drafts, if you do it the that way and you grade it that way, you're not going to come out overly pleased. But if you grade it from just a what they had to work with, I could get healthy skepticism for the picks. There are some question marks there. But I think overall they did a pretty good job with what they had to work with. And there's a couple guys that, you know, could probably make some, you know, have some healthy impacts, starting with Ross Blacklock from TCU. That would be, you know, the home run pick where you thought he was going to go in the first round. And then just on down the line, there's reason for optimism with the other picks, and there's also reason for, you know, to look at them and raise the eyebrows a little and say, huh, are these guys going to work out in the NFL? But overall, for what they had, I'll give them a solid B.
It's interesting, though, because if you look at some of the reviews online, the gradings they've been given, the Texans, I think, in the primary one, they were listed at 27th. Do you think that's a fair reflection, or do you think people are just, they're so stuck up on disliking O'Brien that they're disregarding the fact that you could argue he had a pretty strong draft?
Yeah, I think draft experts are being fair. I think for the most part, they're just grading it like the first way that we talked about, where they're just grading drafts as a whole, and they're comparing it to, you know, the assets that other people have. If you do want to like nitpick and go through each pick, I mean, you could easily do that. I mean, the first two picks that they made, both of those guys have missed entire seasons in college. Blacklock missed his sophomore year, and then, you know, before he transferred to Louisville, the third round pick missed his year before going to Florida as a grad transfer. So you could say that. A lot of people think Heck is a little bit raw, a little bit tall, hasn't quite grown into his body, kind of a little bit of a project. I don't know what you would say negatively about John Reed in that situation. Wouldn't have too much to say about that. And then, of course, man, you draft receivers on day three. People could nickel and dime that all day. Although I did see Kiper say that he had a fourth-round grade on him. So there was that. But I don't know if I think there are people who Bill O'Brien will never satisfy. But I also think if you just look at the draft picks as a whole, there are, you know, reasons to analyze and reasons to break it down, especially when you don't have the first-round pick like the Texans didn't have.
I was going to ask you if you felt that you had a favorite pick from it all, but I'm getting the vibe that for you it would be Ross Blacklock. Am I correct in assuming?
Yeah, I think Blacklock could be a really, really good player for the Texans. My problem is I don't know what the ideal way to use Blacklock is. I've heard people say that he's actually an ideal three technique, and I know that, you know, DJ Reader, we think about DJ Reader and the good job he did against the run. Texans were ninth in the league against the run last year. I don't know if Blacklock, although he did line up, you know, in the middle in a 3-4 with Gary Patterson and TCU every once in a while, I don't know that that's like his ideal place. So I wonder if we're going to see some more 4-3 from Anthony Weaver. But I think Blacklock is a guy who, if we're just laying out realistic expectations, I think Blacklock is a guy that, you know, he gets playing time early on and you hope that he develops into a starter. But if you're asking me to rank the draft picks, yeah, he would be first. But I just don't – I don't look at him as a reader replacement. I think it's, you know, two completely different type of players for the Texans.
Absolutely. And would you say that you have – do you have a least favorite pick?
I don't really understand. And I just got off the phone with his coach, so I don't want to knock it. I didn't think that Charlie Heck made a lot of sense there, especially knowing they traded up for him. I guess they're hoping that he kind of, you know – grows into his body or whatever. But on day three, I was looking for Leckie Fotu from Utah. Yep. I was looking at the Texans just staying put and taking him. I know they visited him with him twice. And I think that, you know, I know Fotu's a little bit raw, but if you look at the draft and you look at all the Utah guys that got drafted, he was the biggest alpha dog on that team. He was a leader of a very good Utah defense. And I think unlike Blacklock and really unlike Timmy Jernigan, who they're bringing in, he's a true run stuffer. And I don't think outside of Brandon Dunn you have another one of those guys. So I think Leckie Fotu is going to play a little bit longer in the league. And I kind of thought, you know, the Texans traded back and then they traded up. He was gone. Arizona took him early on. I thought Fotu would have been the perfect mix to have that true run stuffer with Blacklock. So I guess I didn't like that they traded out of that first spot. And I didn't like that they traded up with Charlie Heck with that, because I would have liked to have seen Fotu go there, you know, be the guy there.
I'd have to agree. I mean, Fotu, what really interests me about him is while he has that sort of slight lack of footballing experience, he was a U.S. youth rugby player in high school. I mean, he's extremely coachable by all accounts. Like you mentioned, yeah, a good leader on defense as well. I'd love to have seen him picked up by the Texans, but... On the plus side, what I will say about the Heck pick from my point of view is they clearly don't have a lot of confidence in Roderick Johnson as that swing backup, which I don't personally understand because I think he's been pretty decent this last year in Houston in particular. But it does give them a bit more depth on the offensive line. And if we go back, say, 3 years, that's something everyone was screaming out for. So if nothing else, it does give Houston a little bit more flexibility up front, which I guess is a good thing. What do you think of their decision to trade out of the seventh and focus more on the priority free agents?
I'm fine. I was fine with that. I mean, you know, a lot of times you can get better value because you can actually, you know, talk to the guy, you know, talk to guys after the fact. I was fine with that. And I guess, you know, they added a sixth next year. So there was really, I didn't make too much of that decision. I really wanted Flo to, on this team. I think he's going to be a good player, and I think he's one of those run stuffers. But again, I'm sure they'll bring someone in. But I didn't make too much of them, you know, trading out of the seventh, really at all.
Something that interested me with the John Reed pick, he wasn't someone I was expecting really to be linked to the Texans. Slightly undersized, not overly quick by the looks of things, but extremely smart. I know that O'Brien recruited him out of high school when he was, I think, 14, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a really interesting pick. Were you expecting possibly to go with Houston to go with a safety as opposed to a corner, or possibly a taller corner like, say, a Lonnie Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, Reed is just that guy, right? When they talk about right kind of guy, I think he kind of fits the mold. He was at Penn State sophomore camp when O'Brien was there, so they go back. He's a feisty guy against the deep ball, a little bit up and down. Maybe he contributes on special teams. I guess maybe he could try to be your fifth, sixth corner. I'm with you on the safety. I thought maybe that would have even been something that they would take in even earlier than that. But the cornerback room is interesting to say the least. I mean it's weird because Anthony, like, I sit here and I say, oh, this team needs corner, they could use corner depth, but then I look at it and I'm like, okay, Bradley Roby was their highest-paid free agent this offseason, so they obviously like him. Lonnie Johnson was a second-round pick, and they traded a third-round pick for Gary and Conley. So I'm like, okay, should I feel – I mean, what does it say, the fact that I'm not, like, overly giddy about their cornerbacks? Like, am I missing something? Is Are they going to surprise me? I just feel like, you know, that I should feel better about him as I do. But they like the Reed kid. I'm assuming he's going to be one of those special teamers. I guess he fixes computers and stuff. And he's kind of one of those guys who was always very mature when he came on campus. I know you're about to talk to James Franklin. James Franklin said that they had a recruiting barbecue and he was basically just upstairs chilling, studying tape. So he's like, he goes into that, that right kind of guy thing that the Texans like. But the safety thing is really at the very least interesting because of everything we've already spoken about.
Absolutely. And one of the guys that caught my eye, I know the Texans spoke to, was Alohi Gilman at Notre Dame. I thought that was someone they were really going to pursue. I was disappointed to not see them pick him up because I felt he would have been a really good addition, really another really smart player, slightly undersized, but would have been a solid safety to pick up. Or as you mentioned, possibly at 40, they could have gone for, say, Grant DePitt, LSU. I mean, what would you have thought of one of those guys possibly?
I mean, when you tell me you're going to get a Thorpe Award winner that's a safety at LSU, sign me up. I mean, that's DBU. So I was very on board with, you know, potentially a safety there. I was actually in the running back camp, and not just any running back. I was a fan of the possibility of getting J.K. Dobbins.
Yes.
Just because, you know, someone who can run between the tackles. Then you could let David Johnson and Duke Johnson go out there and catch the rock, and you'd have a committee. And a lot of people would say, well, how are you going to help your defense? Well, I mean, maybe you can keep the defense on the field if you're able to tote that rock. I think a lot of that had to do with I just don't believe in David Johnson as the guy that's going to carry the heavy load. 12 of his 62 games, he's had 20-plus carries only. We've seen him kind of fall off the last 2 years, but they seem to believe in him. I just thought that J.K. Dobbins, not because I think that, like, you know, I'm overly concerned about running back, but I just think the value – of getting a guy like Dobbins at 40 would have been nice for the Texans to get. But they went with the defensive lineman, which I guess I can understand there. I like Blacklock a lot. I didn't even expect him to be there. But I would have liked to have seen Dobbins be the guy in that situation.
Yeah, for me, another couple standouts slightly further back would have been A.J. Dillon at Boston College or Cam Akers as well as another guy that, again, the Texans I know were linked with a few times. They would have been interesting additions. And that brings me to another question. Obviously, you got the two Johnsons who will be highlighting that running back room. Where does that third spot go for you? Do you see it in Higdon or Howell, possibly Gillespie picking up a heavier role, or do they look at free agency?
I mean, they've got to. I think they've got to bring in another guy unless they just feel good about Higdon or Howell, because I think that this third running back, whoever it is going to have to be someone that can traditionally run between the tackles. I think you need somebody that you can hand the ball to on third and one. Maybe they think David Johnson's that guy. I just think it's a lot to ask. And I can't really, you know, I was talking to my buddy who covers sports out there in Arizona, and I was just, I don't know that you can really compare David Johnson to anyone throughout history that's just kind of fallen off without significant injury the last 2 years and then comes back and all of a sudden just returns to his old form. It just doesn't seem to make sense. I think they gotta bring in a guy that's established, and it happens every year. C.J. Anderson 2 years ago for the Rams, and then, you know, obviously Carlos last year for the Texans. I think they gotta bring in a guy that can just tote that rock between the tackles, But not necessarily a rookie. You know, maybe Higdon comes into camp and we're like, damn, look at this guy. He's ready to go. Maybe that's why they don't feel like they need that guy. But I just think it's got to be someone that's established that you can count on to run the rock behind the offensive line that you've invested a hell of a lot in.
Absolutely. And looking overall at the draft in these last couple of weeks, self after, let's just say, a questionable Hopkins trade.
I wouldn't say that quite yet. I would say, you know, I talked about it today on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. I think we just expected, like, I don't think he did a bad job in this draft. I really don't. But I just think we expect the worst. So the expectations are so low that the fact that he kind of let things come to him in day two, and he got a couple guys that guys are excited about, we feel good about. But I don't think he's redeemed himself. I do think that fans are finally getting a little bit more hope and excitement to where the draft kind of is. That's what the draft is for. Most people feel good after their drafts. But I don't think, like, anything that he's done has really, you know, I don't think he's really redeemed himself. I will say the Cooks trade looks okay right now, you know, because it's kind of worth the risk, that second round pick. But now I don't think what Bill O'Brien's really done since he's taken over the last about a year. Now, I don't think he redeemed himself just over the weekend with the draft. I don't even think it's close to it's close to getting to that point quite yet.
If nothing else, I mean, after that horrible trade, one thing that's interesting is that he has bringing in, obviously, Randall Cobb and Cooks and David Johnson. They're building a very deep offense as well. When you look at the tight end room as well, bringing back Darren Fells, trade. Obviously, we've got second-year Kahale Waring as well coming back this year. So it's there's a lot of options on this offense. If nothing else, are you excited about the prospects of what Tim Kelly has to work with here?
I hate the Cobb signing. Of all the things that have been done, like you, I hated the Hopkins trade, but the Cobb signing was one of the one move that I just really, really did not understand. I mean, I think you could have invested that money on maybe, you know, some, just bringing in some bodies on the defensive line and maybe bringing in some guys on the edge. I did not understand why Randall Cobb got the deal that he got. I know that he's probably the best slot receiver that O'Brien's ever had, but it just seemed like a really rich contract, especially coming off the 1 year, $5 million deal with the Cowboys. And I also think there was somewhat of a snowball effect too in the draft with it. Tim Kelly has a lot to work with. That is for sure. But the Randall Cobb deal and the fact that in 2021, I think his dead cap hit is like $10 million or something like that, $10.5 million. So if he flops this year, you're still going to have to pay him next year. I hated that move. And just to bring it to like the draft, you know, 90 overall, that could have been a situation where you're looking at some of these other receivers and some of these slot guys. So I think that they have bodies. But as far as, like, moves, I really did not understand the Randall Cobb signing by the Houston Texans. Like, I didn't understand it, like, even the least bit. And as a matter of fact, if you want me to actually put a name on it, like, Devin Duvernay at 90 overall instead of Randall Cobb, like, I would be a little bit more excited about that. I think he's faster. I think you can line him up in the backfield. He works the slot. But because you made that Cobb signing and you didn't, you know, maybe use that money elsewhere, there's a snowball effect. I hope I'm wrong. The Cobb signing just did not make a lot of sense to me, the amount of money that you gave Randall Cobb.
I'd have to agree with you on that. I mean, while I am excited to see what he can do on the field, in terms of the monetary aspect of it all, it didn't make much sense to me. They've got Kiki QT there, who he has spoken about, and hopefully he'll bounce back from last year. If nothing else, like you mentioned, Duvernay was around there. I think Denzel Mims was still on the board around there. I really liked Antonio Gandy-Golden from Liberty as well, around that range. I think there were so many options at that sort of range that they really could have made some good additions, and that would have made a lot more financial sense in the long run. But on the plus side, one financial decision which personally I'll say I'm happy with they have made recently is the extension for Laremy Tunsil. What are your thoughts on that deal?
It was interesting, man. I had a 3-year deal for Laremy Tunsil, and we just had him on the air live here on the show, and he was, you know, he basically just said he wants to hit the market again in his 20s. So he's getting that 22 mil, 3-year deal. He did it himself. I don't think it's surprising. He knew he was going to get a lot of money. But I do think it's interesting that he decides to take the 3-year deal, and then he wants to be, you know, back on the markets when he's still in his 20s. So I think the deal had to get done. When you make that trade, you have to get it done. He says he's been working out with Deshaun Watson 4 days a week. But I gotta salute him for the coconuts to take the 3-year deal, get what he wanted and do it himself. He doesn't have to pay an agent that cut. Not surprising. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if they get a deal done with Deshaun and what goes on with the Deshaun negotiations, before camp.
Salute him for his coconuts. That's one of the best phrases I've heard today. That's fantastic. Yeah, I was watching the press conference earlier on with Tunsil. Something I really admired, the fact that he was being so honest about the fact that he wanted to hit free agency again and that he wanted to do this himself without an agent. And he said he wanted to set precedent for other players to do this as well. He said he spoke to Bobby Wagner about it and how to go about it and what terminology to look out for. Do you think these short-term deals are going to be something that we see more and more often with these top-end guys as the market resets itself so quickly at the moment?
I mean, they're short-term deals anyways, you know? I mean, you know, a lot of these guys sign five-year deals and they're cut by year two, you know? So if I think it might be, you know, a way to counter what is already a thing in the NFL in that, you know, you sign a five-year deal, how many people actually see their way all the way to a five-year deal? So I think, you know, Laramie used the word transcendent. I could see more players doing this, you know, unless you're a quarterback or something like that and you're going to get all your money guaranteed, then it might be more beneficial. But so many times, you know, we saw it with Hopkins, you know, you sign this long-term deal and then all of a sudden a few years into the deal, you know, the market has jumped you. And all of a sudden, you know, it comes across and it appears that you're underpaid. So I think this is a good way where if the cap jumps up, Laramie can go out there and get even more money. And also in the NFL where guys are cut before their deal, it's a good way to kind of counter it. And I think Laramie did a good job with it. I think we will see more players, you know, approaching things this way.
And do you know if there's any end in sight at this point in time for Watson and his situation?
They said very preliminary is all I heard. I got to wonder what Deshaun, you know, wants to do, because if I'm Deshaun, I'm not signing until I see Dak Prescott sign. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. if Mahomes is going to sign, that's a complete different story, because I think Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. So you're not going to be able to say, you know, I want that. You probably say, I want to be close, but you're not going to be able to say that. So if I'm Deshaun Watson's agent and I'm going to sign a contract, I'm going to let Dak Prescott sign his contract first. And then I can say I can convince people that I am better than Dak Prescott. So as far as a starting point, I'm not an agent. If I'm Deshaun, I'm sitting there and waiting to see what happens with Dak before I sign on the dotted line, because I think that's a starting point. And there's talk that Dak might be the highest-paid quarterback of all time. If that happens, I mean, there's your starting point right there if you're Deshaun Watson. So that would be my advice to Deshaun. Again, I'm not an agent, but I would wait to see what happens with Dak in Dallas.
Absolutely. It's an interesting situation out here in Dallas, what's going on as well. I mean, there's so many question marks about what on earth is going on between Jerry Jones and obviously Dak Prescott. That's been going on for quite some time now, so definitely keep a close eye on that. But yeah, they're definitely going to be resetting the market this year. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Moving ahead,
you want to talk about a draft? They had a pretty good draft out there too, I will say.
Oh,
my goodness,
they did. I mean, their offense is loaded.
Jeez. Yeah, they had a pretty good one, to say the least.
If nothing else, I mean, credit to Jerry Jones where it's due. That yacht looked amazing.
Good Lord, that was a flex right there.
But so moving on, obviously from 3 p.m. today, teams could bring in free agents without it affecting their compensation picks next year. There's rumors about Everson Griffin possibly being linked with the Texans. Obviously, we've mentioned Eric Reed as well. One of the guys I'd like to see them go after would possibly be Clay Matthews. Seattle obviously released a couple of offensive linemen. Do you have any ideas where the Texans might be going?
As far as Clay goes, I don't know that Clay would want to play here. I think Clay is at the point where he wants to, you know, for lack of a better term, chase rings. So I don't know if he looks at this as an appealing opportunity to do that. It'd be interesting to see. You know, obviously he's connected to the Matthews football royalty that is a big deal around here. So I don't know if Clay would want to necessarily be here. I keep hearing the name Griffin. And I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about whether or not they're going to be running 3-4 or 4-3. I think that would have to come into play. But I don't know. I don't know how much Clay would want to come here. I could see Clay going somewhere where he feels he could, you know, chase a ring and try to get some jewelry. And I don't know if this is a situation he would want to go to. But I mean, the more guys you can add off the edge, the better.
Absolutely. And I mean, if he's chasing rings, surely it's Tampa Bay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I thought about that too. I mean, that seems like the place to go, especially, you know, you get to play with Brady and you get to play with Gronk. It's probably a pretty cool opportunity for someone who's, you know, been in the league as long as Clay has and has watched Tom Brady, you know, year after year win Super Bowls. That would probably be a good spot. Plus go out there to Florida. I know Clay's kind of like a, I know he's a little bit SoCal from the USC days, but, you know, get a little bit of that. He had the LA lifestyle, then he can go just right down there to Florida and pick up where he left off.
And I've got to say, obviously, Jordan Love going to the Packers, I know this is slightly off topic, instantly, obviously, Twitter lit up. A lot of fans weren't happy, and a lot of people obviously speculating what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. Here's just a little thought, something that crossed my mind. Brady plays 2 years in Tampa. He retires. Rodgers then moves down and retires in Tampa after a couple of years, a la, say, Brett Favre. What do you think?
I've heard a lot of conspiracies. I've heard, you know, Aaron Rodgers finishes his career in New England with Belichick. I just don't know if that would be a good mix. I mean, if Brady eventually got tired of him, I don't see how Aaron Rodgers would go with it. But I don't know if Aaron Rodgers' job is really in jeopardy. You know, I mean, I get some people like the Jordan Love, and maybe the Packers were just shocked that he fell the way he did. But man, I just have a hard time thinking that Jordan Love is anywhere close to being able to beat out Aaron Rodgers. So I don't really know what exactly was going on. I was just as confused as most of the people that were watching as to what exactly Green Bay was doing. It's disgraceful that they've never drafted a skill position player the entire time that they've had Aaron Rodgers. Like that's outrageous. Like that's and the one draft where you have all these receivers, you have all these weapons, you draft a quarterback out of Utah State. Like I think that's just outrageous that it happened. But I think Aaron Rodgers' job is safe. I could see the Tampa Bay thing. There's a lot of theories going out there, but I just don't see how Jordan Love is going to ever get to the level of Aaron Rodgers. I think it's going to be a significant downgrade if they decide to go that direction.
If nothing else, this at least gives us something to talk about for the moment. Some sort of sports life to talk about is all we can want for at this point in time. So if nothing else, at least we've got that.
That's why that was the beauty of this whole thing, man. Like, we needed this. We needed this event. That was the whole beauty of the NFL draft. That's really the beauty of the NFL season. You know, it's been business as usual. And it's actually been magnified because there hasn't been anything else going on. But absolutely, man, it was good to at least get to see some stuff. It's good to kind of see the league and the future shape up in front of your very eyes. Highest watched draft of all time, no surprise. And there's a lot of dialogue. But as far as, you know, the bomb, that Love, I mean, that was probably the bomb of the draft, the most surprising thing to happen.
Absolutely. So finally, just to close out, looking back at this last week or so, what would you say was your favorite moment of the virtual draft?
Favorite moment of the virtual draft has got to be CeeDee Lamb snatching the palm from his girl. That was very interesting. I think a lot of people can relate to the situation he was in. Unfortunately, it's not on national TV very often, and unfortunately for that young man, I'm very familiar with CeeDee Lamb's work as a the resident Longhorn fan out here in Houston, which there are many. I can't really claim that. There's a lot, but I feel for him because that's never going to go away. And when you're a member of the Dallas Cowboys, social media attention, social media reaction only gets intensified. So his mentions are forever going to be clogged with that moment. And I thought it was absolutely hilarious just watching it. That was probably my favorite moment.
Absolutely. And obviously, I'm going to throw out there Bill Belichick's dog as well. I thought that was a great bit of a little bit of banter there from Belichick.
Do you think that was planned, or do you think that dog just jumped up there? Did Belichick do that on purpose and kind of pull one over? Or did that dog just jump on that chair by himself?
I think he did it on purpose.
I know Belichick's never going to be mistaken. Okay. I'm just asking because Belichick's not known as like the practical joker. So I didn't know if he did it on purpose or if the dog just happened to hop up there and get in front of the computer.
I saw another clip later on, and it was Belichick walking back over to his dog and giving him a treat. So I can't help but think that was entirely on purpose.
Okay, maybe he's loosening up. Maybe Belichick, life after Brady, Belichick's just kind of the practical joker. He's going to become like the funny guy in the league now.
Absolutely. And again, at other moments I think that jump out for me, Roger Goodell laying back in his chair, that was just weird, man, to see. I don't know about you, but that was slightly odd. Jerry Jones's yacht I mentioned earlier, and Cliff Kingsbury's house. I mean, wow.
Oh, my. Man, yeah. McVay said that he actually texted him and said he was trying too hard because McVay had a pad that was similar, but he didn't like give the full view. He was just kind of hanging out. But yeah, I mean, that was the thing that we were talking about the other day, about DeAndre Hopkins. Like, is there a more possible extreme personality change of going from working for Bill O'Brien to working for Cliff Kingsbury? Like, we're talking about, you know, Bill O'Brien, the teapot, all those kind of things. And we're talking about Cliff Kingsbury, who gives guys in meetings like cell phone breaks. Like, it is like about as extreme of a change as someone can go to working for B.O.B. and then going to Arizona and working with Cliff Kingsbury.
I've got to say that surely is a perfect fit for Hopkins. We know he loves his fashion. He loves everything sort of celebrity. I think that's going to be a great fit for him out there.
Yeah, I was watching a show at what's it called, Impossible Listing or something like that, where they sell houses, and it was in Los Angeles. I don't even know where he could afford this. I mean, I know Nuke has bread, obviously, and he has other business ventures, but he was looking at like an LA house that was like, I think it ended up selling for like $45 million. He got outbid, but he was already he's already a West Coast guy. I mean, it's really close to LA, so I think he'll like being out there. But I saw him buying those houses. I mean, we actually threw it out there before Newt got traded. I was like, it was the day he got traded, the rumors, and I was like, Los Angeles doesn't have money, but Easterby loves Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks loves Easterby. They seem to retweet each other. They were together in New England. Maybe, you know, Brandon Cooks for Nuke Hopkins, which obviously the money didn't make sense for Los Angeles. But they ended up getting Cooks, and, you know, Nuke ended up going a little bit West Coast to be out there in Arizona. So, yeah, I think he's going to enjoy it. It's one step closer to L.A., which is where I think DeAndre will probably end up retiring anyways. You know, after he quits playing football, I think he's a West Coast guy for sure.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, obviously, O'Brien being the teapot there. Another favorite moment of the draft there was him. He seemed to just completely lose it at one point just before the green had picked. What did you think of that?
I mean, that's him, man. Like, that's, you know, it's he's got a temper. I mean, McClain, we've had McClain on, John McClain, he'll talk about it. He's just got kind of a temper. And, I mean, he yells a lot. Around the building, we've seen the outburst of the fan. That's just kind of his personality. And let's be honest, it's an intense moment, and you're not, you know, around each other like you typically are with a draft. And you know, technology can frustrate you. So it wasn't surprising. It was just ironic that Bill O'Brien got caught. I thought the kid's reaction was the funniest, just kind of just sitting there like nothing's going on, and then moving out of the way. But I think that was just an authentic taste of Bill O'Brien getting a little bit sloppy at the people who were on the other end of that Zoom meeting.
Absolutely. It was nice to get a little bit of an insight into sort of the true OB, I must admit. It's entertaining. Landry, thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
At Landry Locker on Twitter and Instagram. SportsRadio610.com if you want any Texans news information or the podcasts from In the Loop.
Thank you once again there to Landry. Always an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Moving on now to Coach Franklin of Penn State to discuss newly acquired Texans cornerback John Reed. So, Coach, thank you very much for agreeing to speak to us. So, John Reed has been drafted by the Texans, fourth round pick. First of all, what sort of player are the Texans getting on the field?
Well, he's like a vet. I know that sounds crazy for a rookie, but this guy, from the time he showed up on our campus as a freshman, how he prepared, how he worked, how much film he watched, in terms of how he carried himself, how he was with the media. Obviously, you know, I think you probably are aware of this, but got a degree in computer engineering. It was school and football for this guy. And, you know, I think you're going to see him be able to translate pretty quickly just because he understands how to be a pro already.
Absolutely. And he, everyone's been talking about just how intelligent this young man is. And that's something I know the Texans are definitely going to value very highly. They have done in the past with other DBs in particular. So what's he like on the practice field? How hard of a player is he?
Yeah, he just kind of gets it in really every area, you know, how to practice, how to prepare, how to be in film session, always watching film, always taking notes. I think where most people are looking at him, I haven't talked to the Texans about how they're planning on using him, but I think from everything I've been told, most people are looking at him as a nickel slot, a nickel corner, however you want to term it. Great quickness, great instincts, a really good understanding of the entire defense, which allows him to play fast. So I think you're gonna see kind of everything you're looking for on the practice field, in meetings, how he'll be in the community as well.
Excellent, absolutely. And what would you say is his best off-field trait as well?
Yeah, I think it goes back to his intelligence. I don't want to be repetitive, but I think it's his intelligence, and I think it's his understanding of what it takes to be successful. And he's one of those guys we talk about, sacrifice being one of our core values in our program. And, this guy gets this. He's got a very business-like approach. He's going to study a bunch of film. He won't be out prepared. He'll be a joy to coach, and he'll be a tremendous competitor at practice. The other young man that we had drafted, KJ Hamler, those two guys used to battle every single day in practice. KJ is a wide receiver, just went to Denver, and John, they would battle against each other every day in practice.
And what would you say your expectations are for John's NFL career moving forward? How big of an asset do you think he can be for the Texans?
Well, I think, obviously, like a lot of rookies, I think special teams is going to be important for him early on. And then I think, trying to earn that role of the nickel, in the defense, I think is going to be really important. I think, obviously, he can provide depth at corner. But I think you guys are going to be, very impressed with him. I know the defensive staff will be impressed with him. And obviously, I know Coach O'Brien's got some history, with Penn State, and obviously history with John Reed. So, I think he's got a chance to come in and compete early and find a way to contribute just because of how he's wired.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, obviously, the history that Coach O'Brien has with him as well. How well do you think that reflects on John, that after all these years, he's still so highly reflected? And what's how does that really reflect on just how good of a personality he is in the locker room?
Well, I think it speaks volumes about the type of young man he is. He's one of those guys, when you get to spend time with him, you're going to be impressed. And he's going to leave an impression because he's just so mature, way beyond his years. And, and he's got a true passion for football and a true understanding of what it's going to take to be successful. So it doesn't surprise me that Billy remembers him. He went to a high profile high school in the state of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, although he's a New Jersey kid. And, it doesn't surprise me at all that Billy remembers him. And then probably obviously after the combine, probably got a chance to spend some time around him and remembered how impressive of a kid he is.
Do you feel that Houston have really gotten themselves a steal here in the fourth round?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. What'd you say?
Do you feel the Texans have really gotten themselves a steal here in the fourth round?
Yeah, I think so. Once again, I think he ran the quickest shuttle, at the combine. Got tremendous quickness, got, tremendous intelligence. And I know there's a lot of people that were looking at him third, fourth round, somewhere in that range. So, I think the Texans got a good one. And I think like most things in life, in any business, you're trying to reduce risk. And, Billy knows this young man. He knows our program. And he's comfortable with what he's getting. So I think, you're talking about a high floor. This is a high floor individual who I also think has a high ceiling.
And then finally, how satisfying is it for you to see your guys? Obviously, you mentioned KJ Hamler and John Reed and such. How satisfying is it to see them coming off the board and taking their next steps?
Yeah, it's awesome. Hopefully we're going to have a couple more here drafted, before this thing's over, and then some priority free agents. And for us at Penn State, we want to help these guys reach all their dreams, and that's academically, and that's, winning Big Ten championships and competing for national championships and then chasing a dream of playing in the NFL as long as they possibly can and then feeling great like John that when football does come to an end, he's got a degree that's going to mean something and carry weight. So we couldn't be more excited for these guys, couldn't be more proud of John. His family's been phenomenal through the entire process, all the way through the recruiting process, through his fifth year, and we know he's going to go on and do great things, not only for the Texans, but also for the rest of his career.
Excellent, Coach. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Moving on now to our last interview of the day, we have Coach Fleming of Rhode Island University to discuss Isaiah Coulter. Coach, thank you very much for joining me. So Isaiah Coulter, obviously late round pick for the Texans. What kind of a personality are the Texans getting here?
He's a just solid salt of the earth type person. He's a very, very, very solid, steady, great human being, and a tremendous worker, and I think a very talented athlete. But he's a young kid that, you know, forewent his senior year to have a chance to play in that league, and dream obviously came true. And I think you guys will be getting a guy that has not only established skills but tremendous upside with more maturity and growth, and a kid that will give every bit of work on a day-to-day basis. So I think you got a real good purchase, I guess you would say.
Absolutely. What would you say are his best, both on and off-field traits?
Well, I think, you know, on and off the field, you know, he's very consistent. I mean, his life is football. I mean, for the time I was with him, from the time recruiting all the way through the time that he left the building here in December, you know, he's a guy that, you know, was doing everything he could to, you know, establish himself an opportunity to achieve his dream of playing the NFL. I mean, he's all about football. He's all about working out. He's all about skill development. I think he's one of the hardest working guys we have on our squad, and one that's always continually looking for an opportunity to improve his game. And at the end of the day, I mean, that was ultimately his reason for, you know, leaving to the NFL. It was more along the lines of an opportunity to compete at a highest level, which is the thing that inspired him the most. I mean, you know, lots of reasons for kids to leave early. Sometimes it becomes financial, want to try to, you know, get things done, but he just really wanted a chance to compete at the highest level. And after having a good junior year, he felt he had the confidence and the ability to do so. And the help he got getting into the combine and all that stuff really established himself as someone that they took a good close look at. And I know that Billy and, you know, Coach Perry, who's a receiver coach, you know, they did a good job evaluating and they got a good one.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the combine there. He was really an absolute standout there. Fantastic performances, great straight line speed. So according to the Texans PR, 12 games last season, 72 total catches, 8 touchdowns, and just the 7th player in your program's history with over 1,000 yards in a season. How much do you think a player like Isaiah will be benefiting this year from playing with the likes of Andre Johnson coaching him and obviously Coach Perry as well?
Well, you know, I think he's going to benefit tremendously. I think, you know, his opportunity to, you know, continue to grow as a football player exists, whether he was here or whether he's at the Texans last, you know, next year. You know, ability to continue to learn the game, to continue to look at it through a different lens. But I think his the piece that will be very evident, I think, as you watch Isaiah develop, is the old adage of, you know, iron sharpens iron. So if you're going against, you know, the caliber of athlete that's all over the NFL on a week-to-week basis, if you're going to survive, you're going to continue to improve. And I think Isaiah's got that kind of attitude and that kind of physical makeup.
Absolutely. And what sort of receiver are the Texans getting in terms of where do you think he is most effective and where they'll get the most out of him, and where ultimately the fans will really start to see him shine?
You know, I think that'll be all dependent upon what, you know, those guys saw in him. But I know what everybody was talking about. I mean, he's a long receiver. He's got some length. He can go up and high point the football, and he's got good vertical speed. Does not mean that he can't do the other things as well. But I think that you're going to get an outside receiver, one that will be able to give you the vertical presence that you want in any level of football. And then I think, you know, he's got the ability to get up, which will be a, you know, red zone target for people. I think it's a good value. And then, you know, he's a complete player. You know, he gets out on the perimeter, he'll block. And like I said, you know, as a kid who's just supposed to be a senior in college, you've got a young one that still has some, I think, some developmental things that'll happen over the next 3-4 years to get to his maximum playing ability.
Absolutely. And then finally, how satisfying is it for you to see your guys heading off into the NFL and landing at such teams?
You know, it's satisfying. You know, you take it with a grain of salt. You know, I've been around the game for quite some time, and you know, you're very happy for their accomplishments. Those accomplishments inherently do represent, you know, your program, you know, in college, and gives us a little feather in our cap to be able to utilize that message in recruiting as we go forward, that, you know, if you're good enough and we're going to evaluate you to be good enough, that you perform at a very high level, you'll be able to attain an opportunity in the NFL through the University of Rhode Island, which up until the fact that they called Isaiah's name hadn't been done, I think it was like 36 years or something crazy like that since the last draft pick. So I think it's very benefit. I'm very proud of those guys. I'm very proud of the work they put in, and really looking forward to see how they represent URI in that league.
Absolutely. Coach, thank you very much for joining us. I've really appreciated your time, and best of luck with the rest of this season.
Well, thank you, sir. Let's hope we have one, and then let's move it on from there. I appreciate it.